From Washington, the nation's capital, the Voice of America presents Issues in the News. The nation's top Washington correspondents offer their perspectives on the week's major stories. Your moderator is Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Issues in the News begins now.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard, and joining me on the show this week are Barbara Slavin, Washington correspondent for Al Monitor and senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, and Stephen Collinson, senior reporter at CNN Politics. And here are the issues. Iran agreed to a framework for curbing but not dismantling its nuclear program. With important issues still to be resolved, the agreement between Iran and the United States, the European Union, and five other countries must be finalized by June 30. Meanwhile, al-Shabaab terrorists raided a university in eastern Kenya and killed 147 people. And rebels in Yemen, seemingly undeterred by bombing attacks on them, seized the presidential palace in the war there. Well, Barbara, I want to start with you. You've been predicting, I think rather consistently, that there would indeed be a nuclear deal with the Iranians. So what do you make of it?
Well, needless to say, I'm gratified, not just because my predictions turned out to be correct, but because the framework that was achieved in Lausanne, Switzerland, is a lot more detailed than I thought it was going to be. It was a very tough week of negotiations, lots of sleepless nights, many reports suggesting that there wouldn't even be much of a statement at all, just maybe a one-pager. Well, the White House came out with four pages of extremely specific details about this agreement, and I can tick off some of them if you like. I mean, they're quite striking. Iran has agreed to reduce its installed centrifuges by two-thirds, and only 5,000 centrifuges out of about 9,000 now will actually be operating for 10 years.
And these, of course, enrich uranium.
They enrich uranium, but these are 1970s, 1960s era. The most primitive centrifuges, I mean, most countries have gone way beyond this. Now, they will be churning out low-enriched uranium. They've promised not to enrich uranium over 3.67% U-235 for 15 years. You need 90% to make a bomb. So for 15 years, they can't make enough enriched uranium for even one weapon. They will have a stockpile of low-enriched uranium. They've promised that they will either dilute or send out all of it except for about 300 kilograms. That's also not enough to make a single nuclear weapon. Now, there's another potential path. They have a heavy water reactor that's under construction at a place called Arak, A-R-A-K, and there was concern that this could produce plutonium. Well, they're going to rip out the guts of this reactor, put in a new mechanism, and as a result, it will produce only a small amount of plutonium. And the spent fuel will be sent out, and they will not build a reprocessing plant for plutonium. So they can't do a North Korea, you know, which took plutonium and made bombs after they quit the NPT. The final important provision, intrusive inspections, additional protocol of the NPT, various other provisions, so surprise inspections, short notice inspections, continuous monitoring of facilities, including their uranium mines and their centrifuge manufacturing plants, restrictions on R&D, you know, in return for sanctions relief, which is, of course, the bargain.
Stephen?
Yeah, I think it's, as Barbara said, it's a remarkable moment in U.S. Iranian relations, whatever you think of the deal, whether you're hopeful it'll work or whether you're a skeptic. I mean, we've had 36 years of basically proxy war between the United States and Iran, and the fact that the two nations were able to sit down and come to an agreement is interesting in itself and remarkable. I think the reaction to this deal has in many ways come down, as you would expect. Israel, Republicans, other skeptics basically say there are plenty of holes in this. We don't trust Iran, and this may not work. People who support the diplomacy, who support the president and his sort of the central philosophy of his foreign policy is that you negotiate with U.S. enemies and don't necessarily revert to war at an early stage, support this. I think there are some, Barbara's outlined some of the most positive aspects of the deal. I think there are some unresolved aspects, put it that way. On the inspections, the document the White House put out was unspecific in exactly how that would work, although, as Barbara said, Iran has agreed to sign up to the additional protocol, which requires a stringent inspections regime. I think it's likely, perhaps in the future, that once the sanctions have been lifted, it will be in the Iranian interest to sort of challenge the inspections, and it'll be up to the United States and the other powers to put in place a mechanism that can work through that. There are questions about the sanctions as well. There's this provision that they would snap back if Iran violates the deal. In practice, is that likely to happen once the sanctions have been lifted? It took a very heavy lift to get them in place in the first place. It seems to me a little unlikely, especially once the European Union sanctions are lifted, which are the most significant sanctions on Iran's economy.
Which I think is going to be lifted instantly, aren't they?
I'm not exactly sure the timeline. I think there's some debate between the parties on exactly how that happens. But
Iran has to do a great deal first. Right. They have to start taking concrete steps before any of the sanctions come
on. I think there's plenty of room for skepticism that, especially during the latter years of this deal, in year 8 or 10 or 15, that Iran won't much have changed and a future U.S. president will be left with a similar problem.
Well, we'll look into this framework agreement. One thing puzzled me. I just didn't quite understand it. You had the four-page statement by the Obama administration saying, here's what's in the treaty. And then you had the chief negotiator for the Iranians, Foreign Minister Zarif, sort of throwing a tantrum and saying, that's not right. What was going on here?
I know they've done this before. This is the same thing that happened with the interim agreement that was reached in November of 2013. There was a fact sheet that came out from the White House that had a lot of specifics in it. The Iranians, their position has been that there's only one agreement, and that's the agreement that gets signed, sealed, and delivered by June 30th. A lot of people have been comparing this to the end of the Iran-Iraq War, when there was a ceasefire and Ayatollah Khomeini, the leader of the revolution, said it was like drinking poison because Saddam Hussein was still in place.
Yeah.
So what I've been saying is that the current supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, wants to drink the poison in one go. He doesn't want to do it in two doses. Mm. So the Iranians, look, are focusing on the sanctions relief, not on what they promised to do in return. And I think, you know, for domestic political reasons, that makes eminent sense.
Mm-hmm. On these inspections, which are a big issue, and my impression is, correct me if I'm wrong, Barbara, you know a lot about this, that the group that handles the inspections and enforces them is the Security Council at the United Nations.
No, it's the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency.
Well, they're going to conduct them, but
well, they're responsible for writing the reports on Iranian compliance. They're the ones who've been monitoring the Iranian program for the last 13 months. And so they are the ones that report to the Security Council if there's a problem. I think one of the things that's going to have to be done is to increase the budget of the IAEA in order to, you know, to monitor this properly.
Okay. We'll have more in just a minute. First, a reminder that you're listening to Issues in the News, coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. I'm your moderator, Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me today are Stephen Collinson of CNN Politics and Barbara Slavin of Al Monitor. And now, this program announcement.
VOA Special English, a way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
Welcome back. Let's talk about a couple of these issues that have to be resolved. One is that you mentioned, Barbara, that the stockpiled enriched uranium, not enriched to a military level, a weapons level, but to a lower level. What's going to happen with that? I mean, it was a big flap just before the framework was agreed on, and I don't know how it was resolved.
I don't think it has been totally resolved. I think, look, they got as much done as they could in this round. They do have 3 more months now to put all of this down in black and white. I've heard some experts say it's actually better to blend the stuff down rather than send it out. Once you blend it down, you can't. It's very difficult to convert it back. You take it out of a gaseous form in which it can be it can be further enriched. Mm-hmm. So they'll find a formula for this. Mm-hmm. I agree with Stephen, though. There are some concerns. You didn't mention possible military dimensions. Mm-hmm. The White House fact sheet is rather vague on, you know, it just says they're going to agree on some sort of mechanism to satisfy the questions that the IAEA has had for a long time mm-hmm. on what Iran did in the past when there is evidence that it did actually look into how to make a warhead and so on. People are going to focus on that. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, certainly the Israelis will focus on that. The other mm-hmm. question is, you know, how does the United States reassure Israel and the Arabs, the Sunni Arabs, that this is not going to increase Iran's regional posture, mm-hmm. That they're not going to take the money they get from sanctions relief and give it to Hamas and Hezbollah and the Houthis, etc. And so that's going to take a lot of heavy lifting mm-hmm. as well. But let's give some credit not just to Javad Zarif, who got a hero's welcome when he went back to Tehran, but to John Kerry, who, I mean, for the first time, you know, people are talking about a Nobel Peace Prize for both Zarif and Kerry. But I've also seen now in print that if Hillary Clinton stumbles in her quest for the presidency, that John Kerry would be a very, very sensible alternative.
Well, I hadn't thought about that, but I bet he has.
I bet he has.
You know, of course, but let me ask about this other issue, a big issue, and that's sanctions. I mean, one of the groups that has control over some of the sanctions is Congress in the United States. How can the president does not have a great relationship with Congress, which is run by Republicans now. What's going to happen on that, do you think, Stephen?
I've always been skeptical of the idea that in the end, Democrats would line up with Republicans to thwart the number one achievement, as they would see it, as the White House would see it, of the Obama presidency.
I'm skeptical, too.
I mean, there's a lot of talk that there could be a veto-proof majority in Congress. I'm not sure of that. I don't think so. In fact, you've already seen a few reports that the Kirk legislation by Senator Kirk from mm-hmm. Illinois, which would impose sanctions, extra sanctions on Iran, which the White House said would completely dismantle this deal, would cause Iran to walk away, has been put off until after the final deal is due to be announced on June 30th. Mm-hmm. We have this other legislation from Senator Bob Corker, the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, which would require the deal to be brought to Congress, and it includes a 60-day period, which would, you know, prevent the president from lifting sanctions, suspending congressional sanctions mm-hmm. on Iran until Congress has had time to look at it. We're going to see a very vigorous debate mm-hmm. about that. To me, it seems at the end of the day, if you're a member of Congress, and then the president spelled this out very clearly yesterday, and you are going to have to explain to your constituents why you voted against something mm-hmm. which the president and the rest of the world sees as at least buying time for peace with Iran, it's a pretty tough vote you're going to have to make. So my opinion, and it's just a hunch, but from talking to people on the Hill, is that in the end, the president will be able to safeguard this deal. He has enough executive power to lift sanctions to keep this deal going for the 2 years he's in office. After that, we don't know. A new Republican president could come in and take a different line, but we'll see.
Well, once in place, it'd be hard to get rid of. One of the things that I think worse, you mentioned the two-part thing. You have the framework announced now, and 3 months from now there'll be a final agreement, or it certainly looks like there'll be one. And it gives the president, and I don't know whether he has thought of, well, I suspect he has thought of this. He's a very clever man, mm-hmm. That it makes it hard for members of Congress to complain about what's gone on so far, about the deal, about the framework, because the American public, if you see the polls, they want a deal.
Right.
They're distrustful of the Iranians. But in any case, the president can say, wait a minute, you're stepping in here, members of Congress. Yeah. You're going to jeopardize the deal.
Yeah, and also you haven't seen the fine print yet.
Yeah.
There are some objections that are already being raised, but, you mm-hmm. know, the Iranians are not giving up any of their facilities. Mm-hmm. They are limiting them. They are repurposing them. But they're not, you know, blowing them up. And that deprives a certain psychic satisfaction from a lot of people who are very distrustful of the Iranian regime.
Yeah, but that was the original goal, wasn't it? They were going to dismantle.
That's what some people said. It was never necessary.
The Washington Post said.
Yeah, well, the goal was to prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons. So that was the goal.
Well, here's what the Washington Post said. in an editorial. This is not a news story, but it said that I'm reading from the editorial. The key parameters for an agreement on Iran's nuclear program fall well short of the goals originally set by the Obama administration. None of Iran's nuclear facilities will be closed. Not one of the country's 19,000 centrifuges will be dismantled, and so on. It seems to me a big difference between what they planned or what they hoped to get and what they got. I'm talking about the European countries, the U.S., the U.N.
Right. There's a lot of talk about the semantics. I mean, the administration has always talked about stopping Iran getting a nuclear weapon, which is distinct from the Israeli position, which is,
capability.
Yeah, capability. Mm-hmm. So you've got the semantics in that. One question which I find interesting, I don't know the answer to, maybe Barbara knows more about this than
we do. I forgot to ask?
No, it's just that what does this do to politics in Iran? So we've got this 10 or 15-year period when this deal is going to take place. Does this boost Rouhani, the so-called moderate Iranian leader? Has the supreme leader taken a pragmatic decision that in order to finance and spread Iran's influence throughout the region, he doesn't need a nuclear weapon? Even though he still has the sort of prestige of being able to get to a nuclear weapon, he still has his program frozen. So who knows what this does to sort of Iranian politics inside Iran? We've seen the celebrations.
A good question. I didn't ask, Barbara.
Yeah. Look, you know, nobody can say, you know, with 100% certainty. What we can say is if they hadn't gotten this framework, it would have been very bad news for Rouhani and for Zarif. Zarif is now a national hero. If you saw the video clips of him returning to Tehran, this is a tremendous boost for pragmatism, I would say. I don't call these people reformists because they're not reformists. They're pragmatists, Zarif in particular. And it was a decision by the supreme leader to support Rouhani and Zarif in trying to get this deal.
I want to ask one final thing. I think we all agree that this puts President Obama in a stronger position than he was a couple days ago before this deal tentative deal was announced. Okay. We'll have more in just a minute. First, a reminder, you're listening to Issues in the News, coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. I'm your moderator, Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me on the show are Barbara Slavin of Al Monitor and Stephen Collinson of CNN Politics. I'm tempted to stay more on the Iranian deal, but I know we'll be discussing this for weeks, months. So I want to turn to the terrorism in Kenya and what's going on in Yemen. It just seems like the collapse of countries continues.
Well, look, you know, you have a very potent group that calls itself the Islamic State. You have other groups that are affiliated with Al-Qaeda. You have
Al-Shabaab is the Somali group that seems to be able to do terrible things in Kenya.
It does indeed. I mean, all of these groups are exploiting internal problems, you know, that are specific to these countries. I think we have a tendency, it's like during the Cold War when, you know, you'd see the hand of communism, the red menace everywhere. And instead of looking at individual countries and trying to evaluate what was going on inside, you do have outside actors that are contributing to the instability, but you have major reasons inside all of these countries for these problems. In the case of Yemen, this is a country that's hardly been united in its history. Most of this effort, it's not just these Shia Houthi rebels, but it's the former president of the country, Ali Abdullah Saleh, who has claimed the allegiance of part of the military. He's the one behind it. The Saudis have tried to get rid of him four times. They've failed four times.
It looks like they're failing again.
And it's not clear whether their bombing campaign and so on is going to work and whether they're going to be able to reinstate the legitimate president, who was a rather weak vice president, Ali Abdullah Saleh, for many years. You have a country that's very poor, that has no water, that's got all kinds of problems. And into that mix, you add the external intervention. Kenya, I'm not as familiar with, but I know that there are problems with corruption and poor governance.
There are, but it's not.
And they're next door to Somalia, which is still a failed state. Yeah,
I think that's the biggest problem. I know Kenya. I've been there. It has problems. There's a lot of tribal strife, but it's certainly better off than most of the country. I mean, than Libya or many other countries where there's a lot of terrorism.
Underscores the threat from failed states, splintering borders, not just in the Middle East, but in Africa, to establish states. This is not the first recent terror attack in Kenya, although it's the worst since the U.S. embassy bombing in 1998. This attack, there were, I think, over 140 people, mostly students, basically butchered by these Al-Shabaab guerrillas that came across from Somalia. You know, it just underscores the fact that the West and the United States and its allies might have checked the threat from core al-Qaeda, as the president has often reminded us, but the new terror threat is from these disparate groups all over the Middle East, in Africa, in Europe, who can basically, all it needs, as in this case, is four gunmen to cause a massacre.
Well, they certainly killed a lot of people, and certainly in Kenya made a point of singling out the non-Muslims,
right?
Of which I guess there were a lot at this university. Barbara, President Obama has had a bigger idea than just this arms deal or with Iran, where there would be a detente between the United States and Iran. Obviously, this framework agreement does foster that. How far along are we on that?
Well, look, that remains to be seen. There are a lot of differences between the United States and Iran, as the president pointed out, over Israel, over a lot of the conflicts that are going on now in the Middle East, over Iran's human rights policies. They're holding, you know, three Iranian Americans and have been for some time. And
they don't, a Washington Post report.
Yeah, and they don't treat their own people, you know, that well. So this is not the beginning of a, you know, of a beautiful friendship a la Casablanca. But it does give the United States options to talk to Iran about a number of issues and perhaps begin to help curb the terrible civil war in Syria, for example, cooperate a little bit more on Iraq. So I think we have to be cautious about it. But again, what we can say is that without the deal, there would have been no opportunity for a better relationship. With the deal, we do have some definite prospects.
Stephen, what the president, that we know there's been sketchy reporting, but it's been getting better, about the president's vision of detente with Iran, which is, you mentioned, 36 years. We haven't had anything like that, quite the opposite. And what do you make of that? The president has never spelled out exactly what he wants here, what he's seeking.
Right. I think early in the administration, there was a view that, and you saw it in the first inaugural address, when the president sort of talked about an outstretched hand and told dictatorships, totalitarian states, to sort of unclench their fists. I think we saw that earlier in the administration. I think that some of the expectations for that were tempered just by experience. After all, there's only 2 years left. How much progress can you make in, in fact, less than 2 years? We have an election year next year, which is going to politicize everything. So, you know, the possibilities are there, but if you look at the flip side of this, in some ways, this could cause more conflict between the United States and Iran. Iran has been struggling under sanctions. Its economy has been dismembered. It's costing it a lot of money, billions of dollars, for Iran to prop up President Bashar al-Assad in Syria, for example. This could help them do that. I mean, this deal could eventually allow them to sort of further their tentacles in the Middle East through these proxy wars and Shiite groups. So I think it's a little bit premature. That kind of detente, I think, would have to await the change of, at least the change of a supreme leader in Iran, and possibly a change of the form of government. And it's, you know, they see their legitimacy in many ways as opposing the United States, which is why every Friday in the mosques you hear death to America and talk about the great Satan. So I think it would be very risky in many ways for the Iranian clerical establishment to push a detente with the United States.
You know, in the shorter run, there's something that you touched on earlier and that I certainly expect, and that is there will be, assuming a deal is finalized by June 30th and signed and so on, and inspections begin in Iran, inspections of the nuclear facilities, there will always be friction. I mean, the Iranians agree to these inspections and then don't like them.
Right. And why wouldn't they test them? It's in their interests. So, you know, I think we're definitely going to see that. You saw that in Iraq, and we're going to see that in Iran. It's because it's an issue of national pride.
All right. That's all the time we have. Joining us today were Barbara Slavin, Washington correspondent for Al Monitor and senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, and Stephen Collinson, the senior reporter at CNN Politics, who you've just heard, wrapping things up. Now, this program was produced by Anya Zalewski. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites. I'm Fred Barnes with the Weekly Standard. Thank you for listening.
From Washington, the nation's capital, the Voice of America has brought you Issues in the News. You can email your questions or comments to our panelists. Send them to voanews@voanews.com. And to keep up with all the latest news, tune in the Voice of America on radio, television, or the World Wide Web. Join us next week at this time for Issues in the News.